First things first, there is quarterback drama at the top of the NFL draft. Who will the Niners finally settle on at number three? Dak is back. How will he look this season once he's fully healthy? We'll toss that around. And Tom Brady says the Patriot way isn't the only way. Should Bill Belichick be fired up? Good Thursday morning, everyone. Welcome, look at that smile. Welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds, and Brandon. I don't want to be the one to tell you, it's a little awkward. Your Kevin Durant return to the lineup jersey is on backwards, buddy. Other way around, but you are fired up regardless.
It doesn't
or maybe
matter.
You're backwards.
KD is
maybe
back. It doesn't
around.
Matter. KD is back, Nick. Wow. KD, did you watch him last night?
Oh, we did. And now you're going to watch him from last night. Nets and Pelicans. And there he is. And there is his proud mom. The long-awaited return of Kevin Durant, as if he didn't just miss 23 games. KD, a perfect 5-for-5 from the field. No signs of rust. No signs of fatigue, even though he was on a minutes restriction. No signs of any problems. Nets roll to the big win over the Pelicans. Here is Kevin Durant after the game.
I expected to come out here and play the way I played. I wasn't trying to ease into the game. I just wanted to go out there and dive right into the action. I mean, the game was already fast-paced already, so from watching it from the bench, I knew exactly how I needed to approach it. So, but it was pretty cool coming off the bench, I can't lie. But it was also good to play in front of the fans as well.
I mean, it's not hard to play basketball with Kevin Durant, so I think he's going to make guys better. You know, he demands a lot of attention and creates a lot of space on the floor. You know, he's a shot maker, but he creates a lot for his teammates as well, whether it's through passing or just his presence. So, you know, I think that his length also helps the group and, you know, in a number of ways he affects his teammates so positively. So I think a lot of combinations are going to improve because of him.
All right, Brandon, your Nets. What stood out to you about KD's 17 points last night off the bench in his return?
Wow. Oh, my goodness, Jenna. 2 months off, 23 games missed. KD comes back first game against Zion and the Pelicans, and he goes perfect from the field. The first thing I was thinking about as I was watching the game, the only thing I was thinking about was what Nick said yesterday. He said, Brandon, wow, it's Jenna. One of the greatest things in sports is watching Kevin Durant play. I thought he was just making a bold statement and saying just saying too much. And it was the first time that it hit me was when I was watching KD drive to the basket with efficiency and how smooth he was and being able to shoot, drive to the basket, efficient, smooth, and distribute, get other teams, his other teammates involved, come off the pick and roll, pick from LaMarcus Aldridge. I said, Nick Wright is right. Like, this dude is that good. We're talking about 2 months off, 23 games missed, and he's perfect from the field, Nick. It was a beautiful thing. So your statement yesterday is 100% accurate. I didn't get it. I thought it was just Nick Wright being Nick Wright, making bold statements, something that, you know, other people on TV don't do. I just don't see how these guys lose, Nick. He's a walking bucket. He's super efficient. You get James Harden back, who is now sacrificing, going to the point guard, and he is averaging 11-plus assists a game. This team is unstoppable.
Well, we actually are going to do a minor investigation into James Harden assists in about 15 minutes. But on this topic, so here's the thing. I have two takeaways. Two are good, one's bad. The first good is, listen, Kevin Durant's going to be able to get buckets till he's 45 years old if he wants to. He could be out there with a cane and a walker. He's 7'1", and he's a silky smooth shooter. It's a huge part of the reason why he's the 15th greatest player ever and the second best player alive right now. And he is going to instantly be able to score no matter the circumstances. So that's one of the good things. It was a reminder that the Nets' biggest advantage that they have is in every series they play, except and unless they make the finals and play the Lakers, they are going to have the best player on the court, and his name is Kevin Durant. The other good thing is not a Durant thing, but it's we now have a growing, I would say, sample size. Blake Griffin's going to help this team. Blake Griffin, his athleticism is not what it once was, but he is re-engaged and reinvigorated by being in a better city, by being on a better team, and by kind of having more of a defined role of what he needs to be doing for the first time since he was with the Clippers. So those are the two good things. The bad thing is also related to Kevin Durant, which is Brandon's right. I said yesterday, watching Kevin Durant is one of the best things in sports, which is why I hope we get to watch the real Kevin Durant sooner than later, because despite how gaudy and efficient the stat line was, he, to me, Wilds, did not look like himself. He looked tentative. He looked hesitant. He almost seemed to be going up and down the court gingerly. And what I hope is that is rust from the two-month layoff rather than a guy who had been, aside from a foot injury, very healthy throughout his career, gets a calf strain, then gets a torn Achilles, then sits out a year and a half, comes back, and all of a sudden he has the biggest hamstring injury of his career, where it's gotten to where he's not going to move as decisively. Because you guys tell me if you think if that's not what you saw when you were watching. I saw him able to dominate the game, by the way, going at half speed. But he's going to need to be able to go full speed. So those were my biggest takeaways. It's almost a testament to him, Wilds, that he was able to do this when I didn't think physically he looked at all like himself.
Well, I think you're onto something, Nick, and I think the reaction from the people around Durant sort of hammers that home. So on his first basket that Kyrie passes him, you see Kyrie go like, yes. You could see that he was like really happy for him. I thought the fact that his mother was there cheering him on meant that this was a significant game and really meant something to him coming back, especially since he was going to come back on Monday. My other big takeaway outside of Durant is that Kyrie Irving is somehow still underrated. We might have to break out your pyramid again and move him way, way up. When he was pinned in the corner, Nick, and I'm like, and then he breaks free. And I was like, uh-oh, here we go. We're going to get a circus layup or something cool. And we got a two-handed dunk. I was legit shocked and started yelling in my living room. You just don't see this. This is usually sort of a reverse dunk, kind of like jelly move from Kyrie. Points to his family. We don't see this. I'm like, holy cow, Kyrie's dunking? This is the last game he played. Dunked in the Knicks, and granted, this was a breakaway. So I asked our trusty, rusty researcher, I was like, hey, Dusty, can we figure out the last time that Kyrie had, like, started dunking the ball? He says, well, of course we can, Wild. Kyrie hasn't dunked in back-to-back games in 4 years. So, Nick, not only is Kevin Durant back, Kyrie Duncan is back. He's really at the top of his game. I don't know what to make of this other than the fact that the guy's playing better than ever.
Yeah.
He's getting everyone pumped up.
I had a similar reaction to Wilds, Brandon, on Kyrie's dunk, you know, in the flow of the game. I remember in the NBA Finals in 2017, that was the finals where the Cavs got blown off the court by the KD Warriors. But I couldn't remember another time, Brandon, that Kyrie dunked in traffic like that. That's not his game.
Totally. Right.
So, yeah, listen, when he's played, Brandon, he's been exceptional. He's shooting the ball as much as he's ever shot it and as efficiently as he's ever shot it. When he's been out there, he has been, you know, one of the 15 best players in the league this year.
Hey, listen, when a team has it, a team has it. And they ride that wave, and a lot of times they do exceptional things. Blake Griffin, he went almost 2 years without a dunk. Now he's dunking, it seems like, every other game as well. And you said, you know, now this guy is going to help this team win. Nick, I do have a question. Before we move forward, I do have a question for you because, you know, it was a lot of question marks surrounding this team coming into this year, talking about the chemistry and who's going to sacrifice. Can they beat good teams and how long would it take? Well, they beat the good teams. James Harden has sacrificed. So given the injuries, what is it going to take for you to finally believe in this team? Like, what is it going to take?
I've been very consistent on this. I would like for them to not be a bottom five defense in the league, which they still are. And I would like to see them play together, which we still haven't. Though I'm not moving the goalposts at all. This is clearly one of the five best teams in basketball. They have the second best player in the world, and having the best player in a series is a massive advantage. I know that you believe he's second to Embiid. I believe he's second to LeBron. But either way, we both think he's the second best player in the world, I think. And Harden's playing great. But yes. We've never seen an NBA champion microwaved like this, not play together. And we've never seen an NBA champion be terrible at defense. They're trying to do both simultaneously. So I need to see it. And I'd like to see them all play together. But KD at 50%, Jenna, being able to go 5 for 5 from the field, I understand why it's very encouraging. Encouraging enough to put on a KD jersey backwards. I still don't know why it's backwards. We would have known that's Durant. We know he's number 7.
17 points. Sure. For Kevin Durant, yeah, it looks good. 17 points last night for Kevin Durant as he makes his return. Big Nets win over the Pelicans, by the way. Much more on that still to come. Shift to football now. Dak Prescott seen back out on the football field, tossing it around. So what will a healthy Dak look like this season? What'd you make of his throwing here? We'll have that for you next. First things first.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Time for drawing a blank. Hey guys, look who's back on the field, putting in the work. Dak Prescott throwing around as the Cowboys IA training camp return for the quarterback. Brandon, the latest video of Dak throwing is blank.
Yeah, this is guarded, Jenna. It's 180 days today since Dak Prescott dropped back, took off, escaped the pocket left, scampered, going for the first down, and Logan Ryan pulled him down. I mean, it's week 5 game, and then a devastating injury. People crying, he's crying. So it's great to see him back out there, because not all the guys come back from these type of injuries at full capacity and full go, but he's still guarded. You know, I can do this. So I just want everybody just to slow down right now, because he still has ways to go. This is a big injury. We need to see him take a 5-step drop, a 7-step drop, and do that 50 times. And when he does that, then he'll be ready to go. So Dak Prescott, glad that you're back. It seems like you're on the right track. But everybody, just slow down a little bit. Give him some time.
Brandon, I still think it's reassuring to see him back on the field. And it's in part because of who he is, but it's also in part because of what other teams don't have. So I'm going to very quickly give you a list of teams. Then I'll tell you what they have in common. Washington, Philly, Giants, Chicago, Lions, Panthers, Saints, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets, Steelers, Colts, Texans, Jags, Broncos. That's half the league. What do they all have in common? All of those teams have no idea what production they're getting from the quarterback position this year. The Cowboys are not on that list. We're in a very weird spot where half the league has major question marks at quarterback or is about to start a rookie they draft this year. So I think for the Cowboys fans, it's reassuring just because they know we're not in that giant bucket of teams that doesn't know what they're doing at quarterback. Forget the future for this season.
Why'd you put the Patriots on there? We know what we're getting in terms of production. 7 passing touchdowns, 11 interceptions. We're good with that, Nick. That's fine. Hey, I thought this was not viral. I liked it, Brandon, because it feels like we're in an arms race to have the most ridiculous training video. And Dak Prescott gave me something nice and simple. The latest being Chris Carson, who, after watching Derrick Henry, said, okay, I see your push-ups. I will now do push-ups on a ball with one leg on a resistance band with a chain around my waist as my friend
Jenna
or
does
trainer
that every day.
Sort of spots me.
Only Tuesdays
you know what
and
I
Fridays.
Like? Throwing the football. I like running the football. You know what I like? Some cones on the field, maybe. That's it. I just can't keep going and going and going. I like Dak's workout
this
videos.
This is easy. This is
so
a warm-up for Jenna. Tell him, Jenna,
it's
this is
nothing.
A warm-up for you.
It's nothing. Every other Wednesday, please. And that weight on him, please. Buffalo now. Josh Allen was asked in a recent interview. This is great. What he thought about the franchise tag. And his response, this is it. Ew. Brandon, the Bills' negotiations with Josh Allen will be blank.
Straightforward, but I love his answer. I should have went with ew. I mean, the franchise tag was created in good faith for both sides, the franchise and the franchise quarterback or the franchise player to sit down and buy more time to get a long-term deal in place. The NFL and the organizations really hasn't honored that. They use that as leverage to That's hold right. guys for another year, even 2 years.
That's
so I'm with Josh right. Allen here, but Nick, this is straightforward. They got to get a deal done, man. We talk about one guy's growth from 1 year to the next year, the maturation of a young quarterback. You go from a guy that everybody's like, I don't know. And then all of a sudden, you're top five in all quarterback metrics. We're talking about passer rating. We're talking about touchdowns, completions. Nick, can we please get on the same page here? Like, let's not go into the next football season arguing about Josh Allen. He is a top five quarterback.
Oh, he's not a top five quarterback, but we can get on the same page on the contract negotiation stuff. We're not good. I need to see more. But it's going to be smooth because the Bills were in quarterback wilderness for a quarter century. They don't want to go back. And Josh Allen was in the literal wilderness when he went to college in Wyoming, and he understands what a bird in the hand is worth. It's going to be smooth because he's going to get the Deshaun Watson contract. That's the deal he's going to get. They're going to scratch out Deshaun's name. They're going to put in Josh Allen's name, and I think both sides are going to come to an agreement. So whether they should give him that contract or not is a different discussion for a different day, but I think it's going to be a smooth negotiation, Wilds.
Okay, I don't think it's going to be quite as smooth as you think it is, because I think there's a few other quarterbacks who are looking around like, who's going to be the first one in the pool? Baker's going to be looking at Josh. Josh is going to be looking at Lamar. Lamar's going to be looking at Baker. It's going to be a little standoff, everyone trying to figure out who deserves what. So here's the, according to SpotTrack, what they're probably going to get. If I was Josh Allen, 4 years, $168 million, I'd say, sure. Everyone should be happy with this. A lot of money. I wonder if this is how it plays out, Jen.
Josh Allen, eligible for a new contract extension this offseason. Let's talk some hoops now. The latest on Kawhi Leonard's future. Most rival executives think Kawhi will definitely re-sign with the Clippers, barring a dramatic turn of events. So, Brandon, the report that Kawhi is likely to re-sign is blank.
Oh, it's an easy answer. It's a nightmare for Nick. There's a few things we all know about Nick James, right?
Give me a break.
One, his wife is a stylist. She dresses him so he can't take credit for how good he looks on TV. The other thing is Baker Mayfield. I don't understand why he loves Baker Mayfield. And the third is LeBron James. He's going down with LeBron James.
Sure.
He's going to ride the parade, the ship when they go, you know, celebrate his fifth championship. So this is a nightmare for
this
you,
year,
Nick,
that's right.
because this dude is going to give you problems not only this year,
next year, and a year after that. So year 20, year 21 for LeBron James as he's still trying to chase the GOAT, Michael Jordan, he still got to go through that guy. So I don't know what you guys going to do for the next couple years, man.
Well, listen, I wasn't going to make this about LeBron, and I'll be honest, you know, LeBron and I were in a rough spot right now ever since I found out I got cut from Space Jam, but that's neither here nor there. The Clippers got to get out of the kiddie pool before they can be discussed amongst the teams that are actual championship contenders. So I'm not thinking about them and the Lakers. I am thinking this, Wilds.
Wow.
It's news that it's news. And this is what I alluded to a month ago when I was like, there are, you know, tiny rumblings coming out of Miami that they did what they did at the trade deadline because they want to keep the door slightly ajar for Kawhi. When the Clippers traded a half dozen plus first round picks to get Paul George, everyone's like, no, it's fine because they're getting Paul George and Kawhi. No one ever considered in the realm of possibilities that Kawhi would only be there for 2 years. And now they're like, hey guys, Kawhi's probably going to re-sign. It's news that it's news, Wilds, because this is not the Clippers' plan that there's any chance they could lose Kawhi Leonard.
So do you think he's actually going to leave, Nick? Because my answer was Richter scale, that it was just barely moving. It's not really worth reporting unless it really moved. But it is barely moving, but I still wouldn't report it. So do you actually think there's a chance that he leaves?
Oh, well, you asked me two different questions. Do I think he leaves? No. Do I think there's a chance that he leaves? 100% yes. And if they lose in round one, I think he will. I think he... Yeah,
he
you
just
can
bought
sell
an $18 million
home. Did. He did.
That's true. You always lose money. Anytime you buy a home over $1 million, you lose on that. He's not going to lose on that. He's there to stay.
Okay, well,
rent it.
I'd love to go play for you, but I can't. I have this home that I built, so it looks like I'm stuck here. We're back talking NFL draft now. The Niners have a decision to make at 3.
Jenna!
Am I right? what am I going to do about that home
you're
I just
right,
bought?
You're right.
I better stay here. Are they going to draft Justin Fields? We got some quarterback talking to do next. First things first. Back here talking NFL draft now. Justin Fields is going to throw at Ohio State's second pro day next week. He threw back on March 30th, but the Niners brass, owners of that number 3 pick, they weren't there. They'll be there this time as they continue to weigh their options with that pick. Former Niner Richard Sherman with some thoughts, some bold thoughts on Fields holding nothing back. Take a listen.
I think Justin Fields is the one, even without his athleticism, if you just took him as a standalone pocket passer and his efficiency and his completion percentage and what he's able to do week in and week out, he's a winner. He's been at a program that competes at a high level year in and year out, always in the championships, always in the big games, and he's played well, and he's managed those situations really well. And I think that his athleticism just adds another layer of elite ability that makes him a difference maker. And I think it's also pigeonholed him because you're not talking about him as number 1 pick.
So Fields, looking him up there with Joe Burrow for the most productive quarterbacks in college football the last 2 years. We've got Coach Mangini joining us now. Eric, good morning. But Nick, I'm going to start with you. Should the 49ers draft Justin Fields number 3 overall?
Well, if I were them and he was on the board, it would be a total no-brainer. But also, if I were the Jets, I would be taking him at 2. Brandon and I are two of the rare people whose quarterback, you know, hierarchy did not change dramatically once the game stopped being played. Like, I mean, Justin Fields' stock is dropping as if he suffered a major injury or had an arrest, and neither happened. Yet all college football season, he was the second best quarterback. It was Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, and now all of a sudden, he's the 4th. Is he the 5th best quarterback? I don't know what's happening there. But the Niners are in a very unique spot because they traded up for the 3rd pick with 2 things in mind. One is they traded up for the 3rd pick with the knowledge that Lawrence is going to be gone and almost assured that Zach Wilson's going to be gone. So they knew whichever quarterback they wanted must be someone that's not Lawrence or not Zach Wilson, and he was still worth the 3 first-round picks. The question I would have for Coach is this. They are spending 3 first-round picks on this player. I think most people would agree that the argument for Mac Jones is pro-ready, low floor. And the argument for Justin Fields is a far, far higher ceiling to go along with he excelled against the best competition. If you were running a team, coach, that's a really good team that was in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and you had given up that type of capital for one player, would you be more inclined to go with the safer player or the player that has the better odds of being one of the best in the league, given what you've outlaid for the pick?
Well, the first thing I'll say is I am always shocked that you're surprised the draft evaluations change after people get to look at the tape and really spend time on the players and not just do TV research. Like that's part of the process. And I know you love Ohio State quarterbacks. I'd say that as you're evaluating this, you want to look not just at their potential short term, but at the ceiling. And the thing that you struggle with when you look at a quarterback from Alabama is they're almost in a pro system and they're surrounded by so much pro talent, and you wonder how much they can grow moving forward. I actually like Justin Fields a lot, and I don't think he's a running quarterback, but I think he's a quarterback that can run. I like his efficiency. I like his accuracy. I think there's going to need to be some development in terms of full field reads, but there's so much to like about him. It makes sense for San Francisco to want to get him in that spot.
Oh, coach, I don't know. I'm not sold on the fact that the Jets already made their mind up on Zach Wilson. I think the 49ers should be talking about taking Zach Wilson because I don't see him getting past the Jets. How can you? If rarity was a commodity, he would be the most valuable thing in the draft right now. We're talking about a guy that plays the quarterback position. He's a 4.4 40. He has a talented of an arm. He's talented with his arm. He can make all the throws. He's super smart. He's a great leader. He's highly competitive. So what are we talking about here? This dude is something that we haven't seen in a long time. You talk about him running, coach. I truly believe when you have guys like this, what they usually tell you is they say, hey, the quarterback position, we want to put you in a box. You got to be the quarterback, stay in the pocket. So I believe that 4.4 40, we've never really seen it play out on the biggest stage because all he's been doing is overcompensating to be this quarterback that we're telling all these guys that can run to be. So now I think you're going to see that when you pair him in New York with LaFleur, a guy that comes from the 49ers, the passing game coordinator, spent a lot of time with his brother, spent a lot of time with Kyle Shanahan, and we know what they like to do. I talked to someone on that coaching staff at Ohio State, and they said, Brandon, this dude wants to win every single sprint. This dude is super smart. Because I asked him, am I missing this? He said, no, Brandon, you're not missing it. I said, is the kid smart? He said he's sometimes too smart. So this whole thing about football IQ, he has it. He understands what's happening before it's happening. I said, what about his arm? I see his arm. We see the big throws on pro day, but you know, there's no one out there. There's no pads, there's no helmet. He said, turn on the film and see how if he misses just big time. He doesn't do that. When he lets it rip, he rips it. So Nick, I'm missing this wild. I feels like I'm missing it, but I got to continue to do my due diligence because I don't see him getting past the Jets at two.
Okay, I think he is getting past the Jets at two, unfortunately. The question is he going to get past the 49ers? Because, coach, I find it very odd that the 49ers would trade up in the draft, and then when they were faced with the decision of who they were going to take, their answer is, not quite sure yet. So it's sort of like episode of The Bachelor. Oh, marry either one of these people. Love them both. Like, what? That's not going to work. Throughout the draft, people trade up with a guy in mind. You trade up for Goff. You trade up for Mahomes. You trade up for Wentz. Maybe Wentz didn't work out, but at least you had a clear decision. We are trading up because we love this guy. The idea that they're packing their bags and going to the airport, say, hey, where are you headed? Like, not sure. Somewhere warm, we've got shorts in the suitcase. Like, it just seems weird that they would make a decision, get to the final step, and not know who they're going to choose.
I don't think that's that strange. Remember, there's still two teams to pick ahead of them. you better like a couple guys. You better feel that there's two guys that can fill your needs, because you don't know what the Jets are going to do. And there is some conflict in the draft room. I remember when I had a number four over pick, and we were looking at either DeBrickashaw Ferguson or Vernon Davis. I loved Vernon Davis. But what made sense as we kept going through the process is to get the left tackle. And Brick played like 12 years at a very high level, and it was the smart pick. But you had to go through all the discussions to make sure that you find the guy that's right for you. And Brandon, the only thing I'll say about talking to college coaches is they're always going to say good things about guys because they want their guys to get drafted high, because it helps their recruiting. So you got to, there's a little grain of salt with that stuff.
Well, hey, if this guy lied to me, then we're going to have problems, because we go back 15 years, so he better be giving me the right information. Look, I do want to say this, though, all right, because this is a big discussion, and it's not like just sitting up here trying to entertain. I truly believe that Justin Fields can go down as a great quarterback that the NFL has ever seen. If you go to quarterbackcollective.com, this is what you're going to see. You're going to see a huge picture of Justin Fields. And this is the only pro-style development pipeline for the high school quarterback. Now, this is interesting. This is where this stuff gets deep. Now, if you scroll down, who are you going to see? Sean McVay. And then we always talk about coaching trees. Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick. You can go on and on and on. Coach Walsh. And then you got Coach Mike Shanahan. And we keep talking about this offense and what they do and how they develop guys and how they think and how they approach the game. You got Mike Shanahan sitting here. Under him, you have Kyle Shanahan. You have Sean McVay. You have Matt LaFleur. You have Mike LaFleur. They're telling you this is our tree. Now, who's working out together? Zach Wilson and Justin Fields. So this whole conversation about, you know, Mac Jones, it's real. I do believe teams really like him. He's pro ready right now, Nick. But I'm telling you, the 49ers and the Jets is going to come down to Zach Wilson and Justin Fields. And I'm saying it again, we can't let Justin Fields get past two. The New York Jets organization can't let it happen.
Okay, at some point, I feel like Brandon is still in the first stage of grief, denial, on the fact that Justin Fields is not going to be a New York Jet. The entire football world has seemingly acknowledged, except for Brandon, who's holding on to hope for it. On Mac Jones, just quickly here before we move on, I think that Niners brain trust should at least throw this question around in the meeting. If we draft Mac Jones, what is the furthest Justin Fields could fall in the draft? If we draft Justin Fields, what is the furthest Mac Jones could fall in the draft? Because I feel like if they don't take Mac Jones at three, he could fall all the way outside of the top 10, maybe all the way to 15 in New England. That is impossible to happen with Justin Fields, which to me speaks to what the better pick would be. But there is so much smoke surrounding Mac Jones, Jenna, that it has to be taken seriously.
Yep. But maybe not the better pick for San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan. All right, time for Knicks NBA medals. We take a turn. Russell Westbrook, he went off last night. Ho-hum, 23 points, 14 rebounds, 15 dimes, triple-double it like it ain't no thing. But Russ left off the podium because triple-doubles are nothing for him anymore. Nick, who did it better than Russ last night?
Sorry, Russ, you were playing the G League Magic, so all your stats get cut by a third. Durant, 17, 7, and 5. Almost no minutes. 5 of 5 from the field. A true shooting percentage of 120%. That's impossible. KD with a bronze medal. Welcome back, KD. Oh, my God. My guy gang sign. John Wall, 31, 3, 7 with 4 steals as the Rockets get a surprising win over the Mavs. Luka, not great. Kristaps, not great. Mavs, you need to get these wins, guys. You're trying to catch the Lakers and pass them. Gold medalist. Oh, my goodness. Point God. It is the hottest team in the league. 29, 4, and 9. A win over the 1-seed Jazz, but maybe not the 1-seed for long, as the Suns surging to only a game and a half back. And Chris Paul surging up MVP rankings. People laughed when I had him third early in the year. Where you got him now? Chris Paul with the gold. There are Jenna Wolf, your medalists for Wednesday in the NBA.
Oh, Nick, we're talking about the Suns?
There's the metal stand.
Oh, we're allowed to talk about the Suns on this show now.
You have to stop saying this. You have to stop saying this. We never were not allowed to talk about the Suns. We're not allowed to talk about the Jazz.
That was told to me.
We're allowed to talk about the Suns. No, we just said they're not going to win the title.
Okay.
That's what we said. We said they're not going to win the title.
Nick, okay, I don't know why you can't reward excellence. You have such a hard time doing this. Russell Westbrook, his 20th triple-double this season, you want to grade him down. The guy's averaging a triple-double. Just because he's good all the time doesn't mean he doesn't deserve one of your awards. I mean, this is like your bias against Tom Brady. Like, recognize excellence, reward excellence.
Russ.
It's okay.
Don't. That's not fair. I love Russ. He just needs
you dropped him off your hierarchy. The NBA
Wilds. Who missed the cut? Wilds.
That's true.
Kyle Anderson with maybe a travel off the glass to John Morant. Missing the cut, Memphis bench. Great job. They tried to do that college move when everyone jumps at the same time. Haven't quite gotten it down, but it's a good shot. Next time, guys, a little bit better, but a fair start from the Memphis bench.
I didn't even notice that. We got to get back to our top story. That guy right there, Kevin Durant, he is back. Brandon is happy. Just how impressive was KD's return? To be discussed next, first things first. Back here with Coach Mangini. Got so excited. Screwed up your last name. Talking about the GOAT, Thomas Edward Patrick Brady. I got his name right, of course. Yesterday, in a sit-down with Michael Strahan, Tom shed some light on the Tampa Tom experience. Yeah, very smooth. Being so very different than his 20-year run in New England, talking about his new coach, Bruce Arians, Tom said, quote, "He's a great motivator. He's got a great feel for the team, a great pulse for what's going on in a locker room, great intuition, great evaluation of talent. When you're in one place for 20 years, you think that's the only way. And I think when you go to a different place, you realize, wow, there's another way that people do things." Nick, I'm going to start with you. How do you think Bill Belichick should feel about these comments?
Well, listen, I don't know Bill, and I don't know that Bill has many feelings, but I do know this. That second clause of that paragraph was unnecessary. Like, if you put that quote back up on the screen, the first half of it is all just glowing praise of Bruce Arians, and the second part is Tom Brady just reminding folks that he's still a little more than a little upset that he ended up having to go somewhere else. That coach, I know sometimes, I'm sure, you know, when you were coaching or even now when you're in the media, you think the media makes a story out of nothing. But Tom Brady is very, very cautious with what he says and how he says it. And that second half of that quote was, to me, a very intentional, once again, little mini needle that, hey, you know, I could have won that seventh Super Bowl with you guys, but you decided I was done, and I went somewhere else, and guess what? Not only did I win it, but I had fun doing it. Like, do you know all the parties involved. Do you think I'm being unfair in that reading of it?
Yeah, I do think you're being unfair. When you look at it, he's praising Bruce Arians. This isn't a comparison piece, and everybody's going to compare it immediately, but it's really just praise for Bruce. And I was in the Belichick Parcells system for 16 years, even when I ran my own shop. So you get used to doing it one way, and you believe in one way of doing it. And then I went to San Francisco, and I was with Harbaugh, and they did it a radically different way. And there were some things that I took a step back and said, whoa, this doesn't make any sense to me. But there were a lot of other things that were really good that I liked. And it was refreshing to do it another way. It was interesting to see that you could win in a different way. And there were a lot of things that I would take from that experience the next time around. So it's not necessarily a knock. It's just when you're with someone for 20 years, you've heard all the stories, you've done all the drills. And it does get old. To me, the only possible shot was where he said he was a great evaluator of talent. To me, that was the only shot that I saw in that paragraph.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this isn't any news here. This is Tom just being honest. And look, I went viral the last day or two,
because I on my podcast, I'm yelling at Ocho. And what I said to Ocho was, as football players, we're institutionalized. We're taught and trained not to rock the boat, not to be a distraction, you know, when we say things in front of the media or when we're off the field or even on the field. So Tom Brady, when we go back to this whole institutionalized thing, he was in one place for 20 years. In the Patriot way, we keep talking about the Patriot way. Well, that's all he knew. But for me, a guy that I didn't stay in one organization for 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is, I played on several in several organizations. I had several coaches. Some of the guys, Mike Shanahan. We got Lovie Smith. We got Bill Parcells and Tony Sperano down in Miami. Who else? I got Todd Bowles, Pete Carroll, Coach Sean Payton. And all of these guys did it differently. And that's what Tom is saying, and that's what Tom is seeing. You know, it was awesome for me to be able to go from one organization to the next, or another head coach come in or leave and another head coach come in, and you learn something a little different. They tweak the practice schedule. They change the meeting cycle. They change the workflow. So that's all Tom is saying. I don't think Bill Parcells should take it personal, Wilds.
No, I don't think Belichick should take it personal at all. I'm personally tired of doing the Tom Brady leaves New England autopsy, but I don't think that's necessarily what this is. What this is Tom Brady went to Florida, had fun, had a new system, said, like, you know what? This is great. The question I have for you is this,
you
Coach.
Guys are nuts.
Could Bill Belichick have had a two-decade run any other way? Like, if you switch Bill Belichick's system and Bruce Arians' system, do you think Bruce Arians could have a two-decade run of success? By the way, it's not ending. I think the answer is no. I think this is when you go on vacation somewhere, you're like, you know what? We should live here. It's like, all right, yeah, it's nice to be at a little resort, but it's different living there every day. So I think Bill Belichick's system sets him up for sustained success, where Bruce Arians, the whole point of the success in Tampa was that we're all in short term. I don't expect Tampa Bay to be good in 3 years. I do expect the Patriots to be good.
Wiles, I couldn't agree with you more. The idea of, and we've talked about it over and over again, that it can be that just a party after you win and conga lines and we're going to do it differently and all those things that we hear after a team wins their one Super Bowl. And then they disappear, and either the head coach gets fired or the team goes back to the middle of the pack or whatever the situation is. In New England, it is hard, and you work every day. And when you win, the grind gets even tougher. And as I've said over and over again, it's not for everybody. And I'd say for Tom, him being able to go to New England, be drafted by New England, and have that experience, I think has helped him significantly become who he's become, and that relationship has helped obviously both sides of it. But I don't know if he'd be the same player without going through the grind that is New England.
Okay, I think that's a really good point. I think Wild's question is a great question. I also think it is categorically insane that I'm the only person up here seemingly reading the entire quote. Like, the idea that this wasn't a comparison when he draws a direct comparison is nuts. And just, I'm going to tell four of my favorite people, these colleagues on set right here, I hope to do this show forever. But if I ever leave this show and go do another one, and some blog interviews me, and the quote is just glowing about that new place, then there's no shots taken at you guys. But if I glow about the other place, I'm like, and I got to be honest, it's nice to be in a place where the production meetings are smooth and, you know, we have retired coaches on that aren't constantly taking shots at me, then guess what? I'm angry at you guys if that's the second half of the quote. He didn't have to add the second half of that quote. He did that because, understandably, he's pissed that he ever had to leave, and he should be. He has won the divorce. Resoundingly. Disagree. In everyone's
no,
face.
No, he did not win the divorce. Okay. Listen, Nick, listen, there may be a lot of validity behind what you're saying right now, but here's the deal. If either one of these guys are thinking that it was all about them, then they're wrong, and we need to absolutely crush them. It was both of them together. It was Bill Parcells. I mean, not Bill. Bill Belichick was the one that had to go pick Tom
yes.
Brady. Bill Belichick was the one
was
that drafted guys.
To
come on. And then you got a GOAT quarterback. Come on, it was both of them.
All right, sorry, everybody.
We got to get to Kevin Wild. Wild's got some weird and wonderful things he's got to show us. We're going to lighten up the mood a little. What do you got? What gift did baseball give us?
Okay, here's the backstory. 2018, Cubs brought a waffle maker into the dugout and Javi Baez hit a home run. So now Jock Peterson's like, you know what? We're struggling a little bit. Bring the waffle maker. Says, okay, hits a home run. Boom, I brought the waffle maker. Let's go. Let's waffle some baseballs. So turnover chain, the turnover like chainsaw, I think, is in Oregon State or Oregon, one of them. Now, you guys all take a back seat. Waffle makers, the new real gift that you get to keep and use to fuel your next game. Great job, Cubs. Great job, waffle maker.
Shift to the NFL draft. So the story of this draft, it's no secret, starts with the quarterbacks. We might actually see quarterbacks go with the first four picks for the first time ever this year. We have Fox NFL and college football analyst Brock Huer here to break it all down. Brock, good morning. Yeah. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Yeah, good morning. It's a pleasure, to be here. And gosh, it's going to be a wild 3 weeks leading up to this draft, no question about it.
It is indeed, and it seems to be changing every day, even though you'd think those top three, four picks are already locked in. So you went ahead and you ranked your top five quarterbacks in the draft. Do us a favor before we get into a conversation. Take us through those top five for us.
Well, number one is everybody's number one, and that's Trevor Lawrence, a guy that has played 96 games of high school and college football. I kind of say he's a more athletic Peyton Manning, but less brainy than Peyton, and he's certainly got much better hair than Peyton ever had. But I think he checks as many boxes as any prospect since Andrew Luck. And I don't think that's hyperbole as you talk to people around the league. I got a chance to see him in his very first action as a true freshman. He enrolled early, and as I said, over 50 high school games, over 40 college games, a wealth of experience, and just an incredibly talented kid. So he's my number one of ones. This is where I differ with most out there. If I was the New York Jets, my number two quarterback, I'm taking Justin Fields. I'm a body of work guy. I'm a body guy as well. And we'll probably get into that over these five QBs. I like that eye test. It jumps out to me. But 20-2 at Ohio State, those two losses, we know them both. It was Clemson and a heartbreaker, and obviously Alabama this year in a national title. He's when he comes in the room, it changes the temperature. The GM for the Seattle Seahawks, John Schneider, that's his number one. When a QB walks in the room, he's got to change the temperature of it. To me, Justin Fields certainly does that. He and Trevor, the voice of college football last year, and I love so much about his game. Number three is Zach Wilson at BYU. The loosest arm in this group. I heard my buddy Jim Miller on NFL radio say he reminds him, his arm, certainly not his personality, but his arm reminds him of Jay Cutler. And as you watch these highlights, look at where that ball gets held. It's down by his belt buckle, and then he just slings it. So you don't need a pro day to watch him flick it effortlessly 55 yards down the field. You put on that tape, and it's pretty wow-inspiring. My only concern is the size. He was 214 at pro day, but he's going to take a beating, especially if he's going to go to the top four. There's going to be some challenges there, and it's going to be all about the physicality and whether he can endure at the NFL level. He's my number three. Number four and five is a toss-up. You could flip them either way. They're that close. Their grade to me is that similar. But my number four is Trey Lance. And I'll compare him actually to Carson Wentz out in North Dakota State. I said to you guys earlier, Trevor Lawrence has played 96 games between high school and college. 96. A couple state titles, a national championship. Trey Lance has played 27. 27. Wow. 17 at North Dakota State, just 10 games of high school football. Uber talented athlete, all of the measurables you want, but man, there is very, very little experience there to really gauge and project. Number five for me, my last one here is Mac Jones. And we'll see whether or not he ends up in San Francisco. That's certainly been the buzz. People love the ability to process his anticipation, his accuracy. I crunched the numbers with my little calculator, and his passer rating by NFL standards last year would have been 143.9. 143. That is how just video game-esque it was a year ago. some of the best players in the country around him. But he's a difficult projection because he's 6'2", he's 217. He doesn't have a plus arm. He doesn't have plus athleticism, doesn't have plus body. But what he has plus is certainly those eyes and that ability to see it, anticipate it. And as Brandon Marshall loves, man, drop it right in that bucket and make his receivers look good.
Right there.
So that's my 1 through 5, right, and we can certainly tear it apart.
So, well, I don't really want to tear it apart, Brock, because your 1 through 5 mirrors what I feel like the vast majority of people's 1 through 5 was before the draft process began. All through college football season, Everyone said Lawrence is the best, but Fields is the only guy who's anywhere close. And through college football season, up until November, there was real questions. Is Mac Jones going to come back for another year? Not is he going to be a top 5 pick of the draft. So I think people who watch the show are going to come think that I have something against Mac Jones or I don't think he can be a good player. It's not that. I just don't understand the skyrocketing, and I don't understand why a team would want to trade up to number 3 to make sure they get him. Can you explain what you aren't seeing in Mac Jones that other people clearly are, if that makes sense? I know it's odd, but a lot of people have him ahead of Justin Fields. You have 1 guy 2, 1 guy 5. Explain the difference in your eyes between those two players.
Yeah, it is. It's a body of work for me, Nick. I mean, you're a 1 year starter, basically 17 games in college in just an incredible year, albeit with no fans. You know, he didn't have to go into LSU and play in front of 100,000 crazy. I mean, it's a perfect environment. Two first-round wide receivers, first-round offensive linemen, a first-round running back. He had a lot of incredible pieces around him. I think people have watched him skyrocket, Nick, because we watched a guy named, Tom Brady at 44, who can't move, who plays between the tackles, who dominates with his mind, with his eyes, with that accuracy and anticipation. And as you watch Tom win another championship, it was like, oh, okay. So Mac Jones, you know, yeah, he's not body beautiful. Yeah, he doesn't have a cannon of an arm. I mean, look at what Drew Brees and Tom Brady and those guys can do with their mind. So I think if you're going to put him number 3 and accelerate him up that list, yes, he's got excellent touch. Yes, he can anticipate and he is accurate. There's just no question about that. He's 77% passer. I mean, that is remarkable stuff. But I think honestly, it's from, you know, the time the season ended to watching Drew, to watching Tom, to watching go, oh, that's right. At the NFL level, Nick, you got to play between the tackles and you got to anticipate. And that's certainly what he does very well. I love Justin Fields because I said to you guys earlier, he carried the burden of responsibility. There were games he played without his head coach. There were games he played without 3 linemen. He transferred from Georgia. Oh, he's got some callus to him. He's got some grit to him. He put himself out there as one of the voices of college football. And, you know, I would feel more comfortable with that maturity and that experience if I'm making that pick.
So, Brock, so what are we doing here? Then why is it only you, myself, and Nick that seem to be the only ones in the country talking about Justin Fields as number 2 and going to the Jets? If rarity was a commodity, he'll be the most valuable thing in the draft. He's a quarterback. He's super fast, 4.4 40. He has a cannon of an arm. He can make all the throws, and he's smart. He's a leader. He has that dog mentality. He's trying to win every single sprint. So what are we talking about here, Brock?
I'm sorry, Brandon. I missed Joe Douglas talking. Is he the GM of the Jets? Did he even make that call? I don't get up this early every day of the week to spend time with you guys, but I may have missed that. Yeah, they let everybody else talk, especially when it comes to quarterbacks, man, right? I mean, that's the way it goes. We're entering the lying season. Yeah, the next 3 weeks, 21 days, are going to be wild. They're going to be full of leaks and full of, oh, this is a done deal. And who knows where they're going to go? I also, you know, like, as I said earlier, Justin handled the Ohio State fan base, whose expectations are title or bust, and got them to 2 playoff situations in the national championship game last year against Alabama with a broke back, you know, coming off of that game against Clemson where he outplayed Trevor Lawrence. So I'm a little concerned, to be honest, about Zach Wilson in that New York market as well. Small town Utah kid, played at BYU in the bubble, you know, again, in that bubble of college football last year without crowds and everything. everything else. And BYU had a remarkable season. The kid is uber talented. But how are you going to handle New York? How are you going to handle the haters? How are you going to handle the media? How are you going to handle being the number two guy that they got rid of Sam Darnold to bring you in? I think Justin, your dog mentality, would say, let's go.
Brock, my last go around in New York, I was, you know, I left the Jets, went to the Giants. And I didn't play good. I only played six games because then I snapped my ankle, similar injury that Dak Prescott suffered. So I played against the San Diego Chargers. I dropped the ball. I go into Manhattan. I'm in Soho with my wife trying to shop. I try to go in the store. The bouncer says, stop. Hey, get in the back of the line. We don't care about you. You're not playing good. That's the problem in New York. How you going to throw Zach Wilson in that? They don't care in New York. It's a different mentality there. Those people told me, Brandon, get in the back of the line. They told me I couldn't even come in the store.
Well, Brandon, they were afraid you could drop something in the store then, right? I mean, that's what they were saying to you. He's messing with you, but you're absolutely right. It's a different beast in New York. And if you want to say, okay, which college environment is going to get you ready for that? None of them. None of them are going to get you really ready for that. None of them are going to build up you, the thickness of your skin that you're going to need, the callus. But Ohio State would be the closest. That Ohio State fan base, that city of Columbus, ask Kirk Herbstreit what it was like to live in Columbus under and in that fishbowl. So, you know, Justin's developed some of that grit through transferring. He's developed some of that grit through some adversity there. And I think he'd be the most ready of those other four to handle that market.
Brandon was shopping for something very expensive when there's bouncers at the store that you're going into. It wasn't a latte. It was either a watch store or a car. Something quite expensive.
I'll call him out.
All right, Brock. Trey Lance.
Brandon's still mad.
Only 20. Hasn't played a lot. But for some reason, the less I see of the guy, less tape because it just doesn't exist, the more I just fall in love with him. It feels to me like he has the highest ceiling. Like if you projected out 5 years, like, hey, who turned into a superstar? I personally wouldn't be surprised if it was Trey Lance. How hard has it been for you to sort of make the call or evaluate Trey with such a small body of work?
Oh, it's just brutal. I mean, as I said to you, like Trevor Lawrence, I'll go back to him just to compare and contrast whether that's fair or not. Played over 50 high school games as a true freshman, won multiple state titles. At one stretch in high school in Georgia at the high level, won 41 straight games. He's on the 7-on-7 circuit. He's winning national championships there. He's competing under that pressure with the best of the best. And then he goes to Clemson and has to beat out a popular guy his you know, true freshman year to win that job. And then he's played 96 games. Trey Lance played small Minnesota high school football. He played 10 games of high school football. 10! I mean, that is a remarkable number. Goes in red shirts his first year. So he red shirts at North Dakota State, learns the book. And then the next year is electric. 28 touchdowns and zero interceptions. 28 touchdowns and zero interceptions in 15 games. Oh, and runs for another 11. He wins the Heisman Trophy at the 1AA level, the Walter Payton Award. So you're like, who is this guy? And I can't wait to watch him play the next year. And then the season disappears, right? He plays one game this year, throws it 15 for 30 against, I think, Central Arkansas State, A&I, Northeast. You know, like that's all he got to do, play one game. So it is a brutal projection. And you're right, he may have as nearly as high a ceiling. I'm not going to say as Trevor, but he could have as high a ceiling as Justin or Zach. But he certainly could have a much lower floor as well because that experience level is so low to try to project.
All right, there's a really interesting thing happening with this year's draft, and it reminds me a bit of the 03 NBA draft, where you have this transcendent generational talent that's so good, you know he's going number one in LeBron. So all of the discussion in leading up to the draft was about Darko Milicic, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and Carmelo Anthony, the guys who could go 2 through 5. Right. And it ended up being three of those guys were great Hall of Fame all-time players. And Darko, unfortunately, didn't work out. And the reason I bring it up is I feel like Trevor Lawrence is being under-discussed because we've known he's going number one to Jacksonville from the moment the season ended. And we haven't asked you a single question directly about Trevor Lawrence. You've talked about his experience, but let's set aside that part of it. What in your eyes, aside from the experience, makes him such a truly, and this term gets thrown around too often, generational prospect? Like you said, a lot of Peyton Manning in him, best prospect since Luck. What boxes does he check for you?
Well, Nick, you want to lay out 100 of them, and I'll say yes, yes, yes to every one of them. He has size. The one thing, he is a bit lean. You know, he's 213 pounds at his pro day and nearly 6'6". So he is a lean guy. He can move. I love what Dabo Swinney says about him. I was just chatting with Dabo earlier this week, in fact, and he said, you know what he is, man? He plays from the inside out. Right. So I love the release, Nick. I love the footwork. I love the timing. I love the arm strength. I love all of those things that any, you know, former quarterback or anybody that judges talent is going to look at that position. What you can't see is some of that, just that character. You know, Brandon was around so many different guys through his years, and he could tell you, man, when you step in a huddle and you want to step in that huddle 17. And just believe you got something different. Brandon, you felt that in Seattle with Russell. The teammates at Clemson feel that, because it's from as Dabo said, it's from the inside out. The courage, the competitiveness, his character. Part of the reason we haven't been talking about him is, guess what? Trevor's not talking. He hadn't done an interview since his pro day. He had surgery. He's getting married soon. You know, he's mature. He's all of that. But to me, like, he just oozes it. And I felt it, as I said to you guys, I got to do his spring game, which should have been the senior year of high school for him. But he enrolled early. It was a guy named Kelly Bryant, a redshirt junior that the guys loved on the team. That was, you know, that had been a good player, if not great player. And here comes Trevor. And it's like, yep, that dude's just different. And then he didn't carry himself like he was that guy at all. He carried himself like, I got to earn everything and build the trust around me of everyone, because I'm going to be the face of this program. And then, oh, by the way, you're 15-0 and win a national title. You lose 2 games in 3 years. He's lost 4 games in 7 years as being a starting quarterback. So the dude loves to win, wow, competes to win. And as I said, man, it's from the inside out with Trevor.
All right, let's take one more look at Brock's top quarterbacks coming out right there. Can't wait to see how this all plays out. About 3 weeks to go until the draft. Brock Heward, thank you so much for hanging with us today. Great insight. Really appreciate it.
It's a blast. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Brock.
We got to take a turn. Talk some basketball. Top story, Kevin Durant making his much-anticipated return last night. We will discuss all the angles next. First things first. That was fun.
What those unis?
Saturday night, the NASCAR Cup Series moves to FS1. Catch all the short track action from Martinsville, Saturday, 7 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Ram Trucks. Built to serve, we're talking Nats, we're talking Pelicans, and we're talking the long-awaited return of Kevin Durant and Kevin Durant's mom. Both of them, big return for both. As if KD didn't just miss 23 games, went out there, perfect 5 for 5 from the field off the bench. No signs of rust, no signs of fatigue. He was on a minutes restriction. Nets roll to a big win over the Pelicans. Here's KD after the game.
I expected to come out here and play the way I played. I wasn't trying to ease into the game. I just wanted to go out there and dive right into the action. I mean, the game was already fast-paced already, so from watching it from the bench, I knew exactly how I needed to approach it. So, but it was pretty cool coming off the bench, I can't lie. But it was also good to play in front of the fans as well.
I mean, it's not hard to play basketball with Kevin Durant, so I think he's going to make guys better. You know, he demands a lot of attention and creates a lot of space on the floor. You know, he's a shot maker, but he creates a lot for his teammates as well, whether it's through passing or just his presence. So, you know, I think that his length also helps the group, and, you know, in a number of ways, he affects his teammates so positively. So I think a lot of combinations are going to improve because of him.
Brandon, you're wearing a Nets Kevin Durant jersey, so why don't I start with you? These are your Nets. What stood out to you about KD's 17 points last night in his return? Also, I think your jersey's on backwards, yeah, but we'll save that for the next show.
Well, what stood out for me was exactly what Nick said yesterday, and I just thought Nick was just making a bold statement. But Nick, yesterday on the show, you said, you know, one of the greatest things in sports is watching Kevin Durant play basketball. And I mean, I've done some cool things in my life. I've been to Wembley, and I saw 100,000 screaming fans as Anthony Joshua took on Klitschko and brought back the heavyweight division. I've sat ringside watching Mayweather. I've done some really cool things in football. I've sat at courtside in some big basketball games. And I was like, I don't know what Nick is saying. And last night I saw it. I mean, we're talking about 2 months off, 23 games missed. And he comes in, and he's perfect from the field. We're talking about a guy who just smoothly and efficiently drove to the basket and knocked down his shots and smoothly and efficiently drove to the basket and got his other teammates involved and distributed. Coming off this pick, LaMarcus Aldridge. And look at this. This is like how do you coach this? You can't guard this. He's a walking bucket.
Well, you can't guard
Nick,
it.
You know, I love watching the game, and the biggest takeaway I will say is, you know, this team can't be beat. They can't be beat. Full tilt, full throttle, everybody's healthy. They can't be beat, Nick. I'm sorry.
Well, listen, I think they can and will be beaten, but we can have that argument another day. Durant is, we say guys are unguardable when they're not. Durant has an aspect of his game that is truly unguardable. His pull-up jump shot cannot be defended. It is just you hope he misses because he is too tall and too smooth. People say it's like Dirk. It's not quite like Dirk. He's taller than Dirk, and he's longer than Dirk, and he's a little more athletic than Dirk, or at least he has been in the past. And so what he did yesterday, I mean, he's the 15th greatest player in the history of the game, and he came in, and the only caveat I will add is he, to me, did not look like himself, and he still scored 17 points on zero missed shots in limited minutes. But I went back this morning and rewatched, not the entirety, but rewatched his shots and assists from his first game of the season. And my only concern, Wilds, is in watching that compared to last night, is last night he looked tentative and almost ginger going up and down the court. Now, maybe it's because it's a soft tissue injury and he was just in his head a little hesitant. But it's a testament to how great he is that he was able to do what he did at not, I don't, to me, he wasn't nearly 100%. He didn't look nearly 100% athletically, and he still is out there doing that. So my takeaway was part complimentary and part a little concern because I don't think he is. He's either not totally right or he doesn't trust his body yet, or maybe it's just rust and you need another game. But that wasn't the Kevin Durant that I'm used to seeing last night, even as great as he was.
I agree with you. I think there was something to the eye test where, like, he doesn't look 100%. And I think if he was, he just would have started. We went the whole first quarter and then half of the second quarter, and then he went in. So I still think we're still in the rehab process, even though he is playing. But Nick, the most interesting thing to me, the most unexpected thing, was Kyrie dunking. I expected Durant to play, but Kyrie, I did not expect this at all. Dunking in traffic. And I called Dusty. I said, Dusty, when's the last time Kyrie has been dunking like this? And he said, if you take the dunk that he had against the Knicks that was on a breakaway, Kyrie has not had back-to-back dunks in games since 2017. So look, I know the guy misses a few games every once in a while, but he is back and better than ever. Since his little recent sabbatical, he's at 23-7, and the Nets are 6-1, Nick. So I think although Durant is the headline, Kyrie playing out of his mind, I don't want to get lost in the sauce.
The Kyrie jersey.
Oh, he's got a Kyrie jersey. Great.
Kyrie is playing.
I guess.
Go ahead.
I just want to know what is it going to take to convince you that this is the team to beat and they have everything they need? Like, what more do you need to see, buddy?
Well, listen, what have I needed to see all year? I've needed to see a team that is not aggressively bad at defense. And let me check the latest rankings. It's a 30-team league. Oh, they're still 25th. And I'd like to see them play together, which we still haven't. But listen, Kyrie's playing the best ball of his life. KD's back. Your guy Harden declared himself the MVP. All I know is this, Jenna. If somebody manages to beat him, that must be GOAT stuff if that happens. I guess.
Okay.
See you tomorrow.